Warning. The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Talk radio for the thinking person, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
We have to not only question the world as it is and stand up for those African Americans who haven't been so lucky. Because yes, you've worked hard, but you've also been lucky. That's a pet peeve of mine, people who've been successful and don't realize they've been lucky. That God may have blessed them. It wasn't nothing you did. So don't have an attitude.
Blue Monday. How are you, Blue Monday? Got to work like a slave all deep.
It is the Savage Nation. What a sad day that the demagogue in the White House just doesn't relent. He just doesn't relent. Now, at the risk of being called an Obama hater, I won't talk about Obama much today, but the damage he has done is nothing compared to the damage he will do between now and the end of December. Hi, welcome to the show. How are you? How's the Monday treating you? So he gives a speech before a black college, Howard University, and again he says, he repeats the big lie of the communist left, that anyone who has succeeded is just lucky. I guess that means he's been lucky. He sure has been lucky. Never worked a day in his life and became president. Unless you include communist organizing. I love the word community organizer. The first part of the word is correct. Commune, it's not itty, it's communist organizer. But let's put all of that aside because you don't want to hear it anymore. People who are not white people, when they listen to a man like me say this, they say it's based on racism because their minds are prejudiced. Prejudiced means to prejudge. I learned that when I was 12 years old from a comic strip. Prejudice means to prejudge. So every time we criticize this psychotic in the White House, you are prejudiced in thinking that it's because of his race when it's because of his politics. But I can't convince you of that because you're probably too biased to understand it. So let me give you a little other story to show you how prejudiced he is. I read a story in the New York Post over the weekend. Obama's last act is to force suburbs to be less white and less wealthy, by Paul Sperry of the New York Post. So I read it in great detail, and I thought I had seen it all. I mean, I know what HUD is. I know what Section 8 housing has done. I know the devastation that has been foisted upon neighborhoods through the liberal policies of HUD. I know about it. Believe me, I know about it. So I thought I knew about it. The psycho in the White House is changing funding for Section 8 housing to punish suburbs for being too white and too wealthy. They're going to give more money, bigger vouchers to help urban poor. That's an acronym. Well, not an acronym. It's a phrase that we know what it really means. To help urban poor afford the higher rents in pricey areas such as Westchester County. And they're then going to assign new government Nazi agents, real estate agents working for the government called mobility counselors to secure housing in the exurbs. This is right out of Animal Farm and out of the ex-Soviet Union, mobility counselors. So I'm going to tell you more about the new Section 8 attack upon safe white suburbs and what it has done in suburbs that have already been afflicted by this, such as Dallas, Texas. Anyone listening on KLIF? Have you heard about shifting violent crime to affluent neighborhoods outside Dallas? Oh, they're calling it fairness and desegregation. But anyone who knows what it really does, and that wouldn't be Barack Obama, nor his housing secretary. Strange name of the housing secretary, by the way. Julian Castro. Julian Castro is a lifetime member of La Raza. La Raza. The race. Not all races. Not a race, but the race. Yeah, okay, well, there we go. There we go. So in other words, they're going to increase the Section 8 vouchers for poor people to go live near you in white suburbs. Even Hillary Clinton opposes it. She doesn't want them living in her backyard, not in Chappaqua, NIMBY, not in my backyard. Yeah, your backyard, yes. Would you like to know more about this theory? It started with Bill Clinton. called Moving to Opportunity Initiative in 1994. Moving to Opportunity Initiative. It moved thousands of mostly African-American families from government projects to higher quality homes in safer and less racially segregated neighborhoods in several counties across the nation. And how did that 15-year experiment work out, folks? Are you ready for the ugly truth? The experiment bombed. A 2011 study sponsored by HUD found that adults using more generous Section 8 vouchers did not get better jobs or get off welfare. In fact, more went on food stamps, and their children did not do better in the new schools. You heard about the big lie that the poor minorities don't have enough money for their schools. It's the white people who steal all the money. Well, you send the poor people to the white communities, and they still don't do better. How do you explain that? Ooh, it's an embarrassing question. I'm sorry for asking it. Would you please forgive me for having a logical mind? Please forgive me for having a logical mind and asking logical questions. More went on food stamps, and their children did not do better in their new schools. But it gets worse. Hold on, all you prejudiced people out there. Crime simply followed them to their safer neighborhoods, ruining the quality of life for existing residents. Males were arrested more often than those in the control group, primarily for property crime. Oh, I'll tell you more about Dubuque, Iowa. I'll tell you about moving people out of projects in Chicago. I'll tell you what HUD has done to America. It's not very pretty. But Obama's latest act is to destroy safe white suburbs and bring crime to every home. But it's all in the name of fairness and equality. And just if you worked your whole life to get out of the, let's say, slums, I mean, that's what it was all about, wasn't it? I grew up in a tenement in the Bronx. It was nice. I mean, there was no crime there because the men would kill anyone who looked at the children wrong. Oh, yeah, they did. There was no molestation in the South Bronx when I was a kid. There was one story of a man who did something to a boy. I heard that they threw him off a roof. Not the boy, the man. The police were busy eating donuts when the guy took a flight. That tended to keep the other perverts out of the neighborhood. But as time went on, the neighborhood became increasingly dirty and crime-ridden, so my parents struggled very hard. They wanted to move out of this. They moved at that time to Queens to a little rental. And it was paradise to live with a little green backyard. But that's what you do when you're poor. You work to get out of the poverty by working for it, not to have HUD move you and give it to you, even though you didn't earn it. But that's America the way it is, and the way it should be, rather, not the way it is under these communists. And The Way It All Ends was written by Boris Pasternak in the great novel Dr. Zhivago. You may have seen the movie with Julie Christie and Omar Sharif, I believe, many years ago, if you remember it. Dr. Zhivago, that's how it ends in America if you don't stop these communist SOBs from destroying our quality of life and destroying the middle class. Because make no mistake about it, this is an assault not upon the rich on Park Avenue. They're not going to move the poor to Park Avenue. They're going to move them into suburbs and decimate the middle class. That's what it's all about. Okay, that's topic number one. And it's early yet. That's only one story, so I'm going to do the rest for you right now. These are the stories that agitated me over the weekend. I got such agita of these stories that I printed them up from Friday night when I went off the air till Monday morning when I went on the air. Here are the stories that I printed up just to show you what caught my attention. Army shrinks to smallest level since before World War II. That's Obama in action, softening us up. Kerry slams Trump's wall, tells grads to prepare for a borderless world. That's interesting. Really, borderless world. Now, here's the most interesting of all the stories. Poland lashes back at EU, abolishes the words hate crimes and racism units, abolishes hate crimes and racism units, says we don't want to become like France and Germany. The whole idea of hate crimes is so popular in the West. And yet, according to Andrew Bizzard, it's one of the biggest legal scams in our history. He says, think about it. Who commits an actual crime because they like somebody or something? Hate is a precondition of criminality. Nobody rapes, murders, or beats somebody into bloody pulp because they love that person. The only reason that hate crimes exist is to create social stigma so that one group in society might subjugate another using a legal system as a means of oppression. It is a perversion of justice. And so this is the trick that has been used by communists in America and the EU to impose upon people intimidation so they don't speak out. They invented the words hate crimes and racism. They created units to investigate them. And so they have deballed the men of Germany, the men of France, the men of all of Europe to lay down and just take it as they're being overrun and invaded. But Poland, who had adopted this hate crime legislation and other such submissive measures, are abandoning them like a sinking ship because they realize Western Europe is a sinking ship that is falling into the ocean of history. And the Eastern Bloc nations, this is intriguing to me, want out of this invasion, and so they're eliminating units called hate crimes and racism units. Now, let me appeal to all of you good liberals out there. Remember when little Poland stood up to the Soviet Union? How noble we all thought Lech Walesa was? Remember how we celebrated Glasnost? Do you remember all of that? Little Poland. We celebrated little Poland when they stood up to the Soviet Union. Why don't you liberals celebrate little Poland now that they stand up to the new Soviet Union called the European Union, which is the Soviet Union without an army? That's just the beginning. If it's too much for you, I'm sorry, boys and girls. But the world is in real trouble. And there are only a few of us left to even see it, care enough about it, and are lucky enough to be able to reach you on it. You won't read about it on Facebook, that you know. They censor anything that isn't ultra-liberal and anything that doesn't support old Marky Zuckerberg's bottom line. Anything that doesn't support Mark Zuckerberg's bottom line. Now, I don't blame him, by the way. It's his enterprise. That's a separate story. Everyone's screaming, oh, Facebook bans conservative stories. Facebook buries conservative stories. Yeah, well, of course they do. It's his website. Right? I mean, that's the headline. Facebook workers said we routinely suppress conservative news. That's news to you? That a liberal psycho like Mark Zuckerberg would have his website or his enterprise do what he sees the world as? I disagree with him 100%, but it's his business. I have a website, michaelsavage.com. I routinely reject liberal propaganda. The Drudge Report routinely picks stories that meets the Drudge's agenda. Everyone in the business who has a website routinely suppresses stories they don't like. It's just that he's the biggest. I don't like it, but he has the right to do it. So how's that for fairness? I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Your Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com. It's the only company I trust for tangible assets, gold and silver. Call 800-BUY-COIN.
We must also expand our moral imaginations to understand and empathize with all people who are struggling. Not just black folks who are struggling. The refugee, the immigrant, the rural poor, the transgender person, and yes, the middle-aged white guy. You may think has all the advantages, but over the last several decades has seen his world upended by economic and cultural and technological change and feels powerless to stop it. You got to get in his head, too.
Now, why did Obama suddenly put in the middle-aged white guy? Because of Trump. Suddenly he heard the voice of the middle-aged white guy, and he knows there's a revolution going on, and that all of his hot air doesn't fly with everyone in America. So, I mean, what can you say about that? By the way, going back to the Facebook comment where I said I don't like what he's doing, but it's his website, it's not mine. I mean, if La Raza wanted me to run a story pushing their racist agenda, I wouldn't run it. So he's a left-wing fanatic, as all... He's a classic Soviet. He's an internationalist and a Soviet in that regard. He's part of the New World Order, Facebook. But Zuckerberg, fundamentally, is a businessman. So he pushes the liberal agenda, and he represses conservative news, conservative links, conservative stories. I hate it, but it's his website. Now, someone's going to say this. Someone sent me this. Someone's going to point out that Facebook has become, in reality, a common carrier, so ubiquitous as to be a utility. And common carriers, they say, are not protected by the First Amendment. Instead, they have to worry about laws such as the Sherman Antitrust Act, which makes restraint of trade a felony. Well, okay, so who else is a common carrier? What is a common carrier? Is talk radio now a common carrier? Is Michael Savage a common carrier? Is Rush Limbaugh a common carrier? He says he's the biggest show in America, and he is in talk radio. And so he created the talk radio revolution. Is he a common carrier? Is he protected by the First Amendment? Or is he subject to the Sherman Antitrust Act? Am I subject to the Sherman Antitrust Act? Am I subjecting you to restraint of trade? Of course I'm not. I'm giving you my opinion. I'm not giving you restraint of trade. I'm not telling you what you can listen to, what you can't listen to. If you don't like what you're listening to, turn on NPR and listen to around-the-clock left-wing gibberish. Left-wing around-the-clock. Oh, don't get me started. Don't get me started about NPR. Boy, if I had any influence on Donald Trump, one of the top five things I would do would defund NPR and make them pay back all the money that they have taken over the last 10 years for personal gain. None of them live on ratings. They have no ads. They have only money from you, your tax money. Your tax money on NPR is used to terrorize you. Your tax money is used by NPR to ravage you with mad leaders who are invading this country with foreigners who are coming in and committing crimes, plundering our tax base with extraordinarily high benefits, higher than the average American. You have to pay while your own country is being betrayed. You have to pay while your children are being brainwashed by NPR. You have to pay NPR while the cult of Islam has declared war on the West, murdering and maiming people around the world. And our leader will not even say the name Radical Islam, and he won't fight it. While millions of us see him as siding with the enemy, we have to pay for NPR to continue the brainwashing. Now, they're the ones, by the way, who are violating the Sherman Antitrust Act, Mr. Trump. They are the ones engaging in restraint of trade, Mr. Trump. It's NPR, which is not a private enterprise, Mr. Trump. NPR should be closed down on the first day of your administration. And there's much more that needs to be done. By the way, the Teddy book launches tomorrow. Be in that bookstore for me.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE. Savage.
You have to go through life with more than just passion for change. You need a strategy. I'll repeat that. I want you to have passion. You have to have a strategy. Not just awareness, but action. Not just hashtags, but votes. You see, change requires more than righteous anger. It requires a program, and it requires organizing.
We should learn from Father Obama. Oh, yeah, we on the other side of the metric really could learn a lot from the most brilliant communist organizer in the history of the world. This guy has outdone Marx, Lenin, and Engel put together what he's achieved. You got to hand it to him. In terms of success, God must love Obama. He just said that he was very lucky. He was born under a lucky star. Never worked a day in his life and became president. How does that happen? Then he became president and he wrecked the entire nation. That wasn't enough for him, so he tried to wreck Europe and the rest of the world. Antagonized Russia, trying to start a third world war. But that hasn't been enough for him. There's months left to go. So he says you have to work at it. You need strategy. Not just awareness, action, not just hashtags, but votes. He is the greatest community or communist organizer in the history of the world. Every speech he gives is an attempt to antagonize blacks against whites, gays against straights, Hispanics against blacks. I've never seen anything like this. Speaking of antagonism, there was a great boxing match over the weekend, which I didn't pay for, but I saw the knockout punch. I know many of you are not boxing fans, but it's an interesting story. Canelo versus Khan. Alvarez lands devastating knockout punch. How's that for La Raza? Alvarez is amazing. What a fighter he is. Khan is a tremendous boxer. Strong as iron. There's no racial element here, or is there? Of course there is. Even when I was a kid, they would pit one race against the other in order to get a bigger audience. What do you think is brand new? It was the Irish versus the Italian boxer. Now, when the Jews were still boxers, they'd occasionally have a great Jewish boxer. And they'd fill the auditorium with Jews cheering on the Jew against the whoever. Then it was the Italian cheering on the Italian against the other one. It was always a racial thing in the boxing ring. What do you think? They don't know what they're doing? So here they pitted Canelo Alvarez, Mexican. Great fighter. Never, sir, his hand speed's amazing, against Mr. Khan, who I believe is a Muslim from England, if I'm not mistaken. And that was certainly a huge story. Thunderous knockout of Amir Khan in the sixth round to retain his WBC middleweight title. Brilliant fight. So if you want to see the knockout punch, it's hard to not enjoy watching it. He laid stiff like a corpse. They just had to stop the fight. Took him in an ambulance. One punch. Now, this is a guy in fit condition fighting for a title. Could you imagine what a trained fighter could do to you? Or me? Any one of us? That is why, when I was a child, I was taught that boxers' fists are registered as concealed weapons. Did you know that? Is that still true? Are fighters, UFC, martial artists, is their whole body registered as a concealed weapon? I mean, I better tell Hillary Clinton about that. Does the Second Amendment apply to fists and feet? I wonder. Because if Hillary Clinton hears about it, you better hush this up. She's liable to, seize our fists and our feet? Could she ban fists and feet altogether? Maybe the state could amputate your hands if you're a fighter, because your hands are a deadly weapon. And they might violate her desire to control the entire population, because after all, after they take our guns, you could still have a boxer rebellion without guns, if you understand history. If you don't understand history, please turn on NPR, where you'll have your brain molded in any direction that the Jell-O mold wants it to go. Okay, WMAL, Amy, you're up. What's the topic?
I'm calling because I disagree with you about Facebook. I'm a shareholder in Facebook, and I'd like to submit that because Zuckerberg took his company public and shared ownership with many people of many different political persuasions, his job now is to make money, and his own personal political views should be in the back seat.
Is that true for others, though, who have gone public?
If it's a public corporation, it's got owners of all political persuasions. If he wants to own it privately and own all the shares, then fine. He can do whatever he wants. I agree with you on principle.
All right, so your point of view is that Facebook is routinely suppressing conservative news and it's illegal.
Not illegal, but wrong, because he's hurting his audience and he's making people who are conservative less likely to like Facebook, which hurts profits, and he's supposed to be about profits now that he's a publicly owned corporation.
Yeah, you know, nobody would complain about his profit-making ability. He's made a lot of money for Facebook shareholders, hasn't he?
He has, but what happens if next year somebody invents a competitor and the conservatives all go to it because they've been frustrated all this time? Then
see, here's the here's the problem. From a legal point of view, you have no ground to stand on. Because he's made lots of money for his shareholders. I don't like what he's doing. I mean, I have a Facebook account, Michael Savage, Facebook.com, Michael Savage, and I look at it. I look at it every day. Sometimes I post stories, such as Obama's latest act is to destroy safe white suburbs and bring crime to every home. And I linked the New York Post story. They haven't taken that down yet. Why is that?
I'm not saying they censor everything. I'm simply saying that as a matter of principle, if you're a publicly held corporation, you sell shares to people, then your job is to make money legally and morally and ethically. And it's not to put your own political views, even if they're conservative, front and center. You should be neutral.
Okay, so let me ask you this. What about a radio broadcaster who is ultra-conservative, always mocks liberals, always mocks liberal opinions, and he works for a publicly held company? Does it apply to him as well?
No, because presumably the publicly held corporation is putting on a conservative because there's a conservative audience. And that's what he's filling, just as if he was an author of a book. You know, and books say sell about politics, so he writes about politics. That's perfectly...
But what you're saying... Wait, let me see if I can follow you. I'm a broadcaster. I'm very, very oriented in a certain direction. I don't have to spell it out. And I detest and I hate communism. I hate liberalism. I hate socialism. I think it's the scourge of humanity, suppresses freedom, destroys everything. I don't hold it back. I express it clearly every day. But I'm not an independent operator. I mean, I work with a publicly held corporation. So are they not, aren't they subject to the same rules that you just said should apply to Facebook?
What I'm saying, yes, except I'm saying for meeting the test, because you're popular. There is an audience for your thinking, your speech, what you say. They're not putting you on because they love conservatives. They're putting you on because the audience is there. So,
okay, no, but I understand that. But Facebook is doing what he thinks is best for his audience. And he's making so much money, he must be right. Probably 90% of the people who use Facebook are left liberals who wouldn't, let's say, program or appreciate that viewpoint. Isn't that true?
If he is making more money by being liberal, sure, but only 20% of the public in the United States is a self-identified liberal.
Right, but maybe all of those who identify as liberal go on Facebook. Facebook is primarily aimed at a much younger audience, the naive, the uneducated, the brainwashed. They like Facebook. It's a childish enterprise with cartoons and likes and schmikes. It's absurd. It's for children. It's for children who are not articulate, who can send a little message quickly and get instant gratification. But it's aimed at a younger audience, which is predominantly a group of brainwashed left-wing children, I would say, even though there are others on it. So he knows his audience. They're all left-wing.
Well, I think I dispute that, since I'm a conservative and I'm on Facebook daily, but I think the...
Well, I'm a conservative. I'm on Facebook daily, and I'm amongst the 20% that he offends. I guess he's saying if you don't like it, leave Facebook. Take your account with you. So maybe I'll create a conservative Facebook as a result.
Yeah, that's exactly my point. As a shareholder in Facebook, I don't want to hear that. I want to hear everybody wants to stay on Facebook so I can keep making money. And that's what I'm...
So what if I created Savage Book? Would all the conservatives use Savage Book?
Maybe, if you got a better product than Facebook. Welcome.
All right, you're very smart. Are you an attorney?
No, but I am going to the shareholder meeting, or a friend of mine.
All right, I'm going to send you a copy of Teddy and Me, Confessions of a Service Human. Anyone who sees this book smiles in this political world that we live in. It's a breather from the political world. I know most people want to hear about politics and stay on the line and all of that. I know that. I know most people want to hear about the state of the world and my analysis and what he's really doing and what can we do to fight back and how's Trump doing. I get that. But you know, there's another part of life, isn't there? There has to be. That's why I wrote Teddy and Me. I had to show you there's another part of my life as well. And many people object to it, by the way. They say, you know, Savage, whenever you offer to give away the Government Zero or Teddy and Me, 9 out of 10 people say, give me Government Zero. Stop already with the poodle. I talked to Teddy about it yesterday. We had a long conversation about that. He understands. Believe me, he gets it. He knows where you're coming from. He's a big enough poodle to accept the fact that you'd rather hear about Government Zero than about him and this and that. So let's go back to politics. 855-400-7282 is the phone number. Oh, do I have good calls. This Facebook censorship is a big story. The forcing white suburbs to be less white and less wealthy is a big story. Army shrinking to smallest level since World War II, not a big story with my callers. I'll tell you right now, you want to hear what's trending on the Savage Nation? Let's do that. Let's do a Facebook thing. Here's what's trending on the Savage Nation caller line. The censorship of Zuckerberg and moving people into white suburbs, allegedly to give them a greater opportunity on what it does to the community they move in. The other stories I mentioned didn't catch on. They're not trending. Obama tackling race, Kerry slamming Trump's world, saying grads should prepare for a borderless world, Poland lashing back at the EU, abolishing hate crimes and racism units, saying we don't want to be overrun and give up our sovereignty, army shrinks to smallest level before World War II. None of those caught on. Not trending. This is what's trending. You hear this? WABC in New York. Cindy, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Hi, Hi, Dr. Savage. It is a privilege to talk to you. My husband and I listen to you daily. Well, I would like to talk about the HUD housing. We moved down to, we always lived in Princeton, New Jersey. Very proud of it. Beautiful area. Moved down to Florida for a year. Came back. Just missed it too much. So we came back, and we are moved into one of the top towns in America, a suburb, as you say, and gorgeous. Moved into a gated community condo rental area. Never was told about HUD, affordable housing, et cetera. We moved in, all of a sudden we realized we were paying three times the amount as our neighbors on either side of us because they are HUD, affordable housing. Within 6 months, we're paying the high, high rent, of course, scrubbing our floors and doing what we need to do to keep it beautiful. And in 6 months, the place is falling apart. We're using terraces as, you know, the third bedroom, tying bikes to lampposts, the whole thing. And it is actually tearing our town apart. You can see already.
So, in other words, this already happened to your neighborhood where the government imposed the movement upon you, and you're saying that it's not been beneficial to you. That instead of trying to keep up with the standards of the neighborhood, they're trying to bring your neighborhood down to what they left behind, in plain English.
It's down. We moved in September, and then all of a sudden, we started...
But how could you not know when you rented? How could you not know that management was giving out HUD apartments to individuals? How were you not disclosed? How was that not disclosed to you?
It was not disclosed, and as a matter of fact, a lot of the few neighbors that are paying the full rent, et cetera, with high incomes, then all of a sudden we see it online that it's now affordable housing, and it was a shock to all of us.
Well, the fact is that the renter, the landlord, was not permitted to tell you that. They would have been sued under federal guidelines if they had disclosed it to you. They were trapped by the government. I'm sure they would like to have exposed it to you, but they're prohibited from mentioning that there are such things going on in your complex. That's the problem. That's how a fascist government operates. Everything is through coercion. Everything is through threats. Everything is done in secret. That's what a federal government is like, which is why we oppose this phenomenal thing called big government. Do you have any options to get out of there?
No, this is it. We are 6 months into the lease, and unless we want to bite the bullet and pay the whole thing out, we have to...
Wait. What do you mean? You could get out of that. You can get out of that lease. You can get an attorney. You can get a real estate lawyer and say it was not disclosed to you. This is not the neighborhood you assumed it was. Your life is... the quality of life is not what you bought, and you want out. And unless they let you out at no cost, you're going to sue them, not only for all the rent you paid, but for damages. See, you're lucky I'm not a lawyer. If I were a lawyer, I'd be president today. I'll be right back. It's the Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
My Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I trust to protect my wealth with gold and silver. Call 800-BUYCOIN. Well, we're talking about Facebook, the product of Mark Zuckerberg. We learned that Facebook made Black Lives Matter trend by inserting it into news feeds. It was not that popular, but they made it. They artificially built up Black Lives Matter into the monster it's become. And when you look at this, you realize that Mark Zuckerberg, like Harvey Weinstein of the movie business, is a gutsy, brilliant bully with a sharply left-wing anti-American bias. But in this case, Zuckerberg, in my opinion, is another robber baron in terms of tax avoidance. I know that many on the left like to talk about the old days of the robber barons, the coal and steel fortunes, the railroad fortunes, and you hear names such as the Rockefellers and the Guggenheims, that they were robber barons. But in my opinion, Zuckerberg, the guy who runs Microsoft, the Mr. Sweater who puts on the nice guy act, they have great PR agencies. This one wears an undershirt to look like a regular guy. The other one wears a sweater, Bill Gates, to look like a regular guy. Warren Buffet puts on the grandfatherly posture, the little stumbly old man again to put on the posture. But they're all the robber barons of our time. And I'm not Bernie Sanders. I'm a Trump supporter. But let me tell you something. The day is coming that they're going to pay their fair share. They're not going to get away with the triple Irish, the triple Dutch, or the Dutch swirl anymore, and they're going to pay their fair share, and they're going to pay back taxes, and they're going to do it the day Trump becomes president. So when he says he's going to raise taxes, I was on the rich. I was very worried about it. What does he mean by the rich? What's the rich to him? I hope he means the robber barons and not the middle class. And the next time Donald comes on the show, that's the first question I'm going to ask him. I'll be back, well, just in a few minutes. Be here and read Teddy and Me.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage. Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Talk radio for the thinking person, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
Racism persists. Inequality persists. Don't worry, I'm going to get to that. But I wanted to start class of 2016.
Right, here's a guy, is the luckiest man in the history of the world. A talentless opportunist with a great voice and a great con man's mind. Got where he is by pushing the racism notion. Here he is, the president of the United States of America for almost 8 years. And he's lecturing black graduates of Howard University about racism. When does it stop? The answer is never. Never. Why should it stop? If you can become president with literally no contribution to human society, why would you stop using the tool you use to get where you are? Welcome to hour number two of the Savage Nation. And, what's trending on the show is two topics. I'm going to use trending. I think I like that. Trending. I don't have any, what do they call them, steerers? No, they have certain people that they call a certain name, steerers. Curators. I am my own curator. I'm the curator of the Savage Nation. And I'm going to tell you which topics have been trending on the program thus far. And the number one story is Obama's last act is to force suburbs to be less white and less wealthy. My headline is a little different on MichaelSavage.com. I'm going to show you my orientation. That was the headline in the New York Post, which is far more moderate than is MichaelSavage.com. So I'm going to go to my website, and I'll read you my headline. Army cuts leave fewest active duty troops. Oh, it's not even on my website. That's nice. I'll have to come up with a headline. But here's how I want to change this story now. Obama's last act is to force suburbs to be less white and less wealthy by Paul Sperry, New York Post. Great article. It's worth reading in its entirety. I thought I linked it on MichaelSavage.com, but I didn't. The question I would ask you is this. What motivates Obama? Is it race or Marxism? Is it that he has a vendetta, a literal vendetta against white people? Or is it that he has a Marxist agenda? Or is it a little mixture of both? What would you say to that? The new regulations are going to be called small area fair market rents. It sounds innocuous, doesn't it? In the last days of the Obama dictatorship, they're going to raise rent limits for poor people in order to make sure they can move into more white neighborhoods, in plain English. So, in other words, they're not just going to drive Section 8 tenants into the suburbs. They're going to push them there. They're not just going to encourage them to go. They're going to push them into the suburbs. The HUD chief, Julian Castro, said the following. He said, we want to use our housing choice vouchers to ensure that we don't have a concentration of poverty and the aggregation of racial minorities in one part of town, the poor part of town. So he wants to disperse minorities into white neighborhoods. Now, that would include illegal aliens who are here and they don't belong here. They've never been invited here. They broke the law coming here. Well, Julian Castro, who was a member of La Raza before he became HUD secretary, wants to make sure that your neighborhood looks more like Tijuana and less like Main Street USA before he and his demagogue boss leave town. But what about the theory that this will bring the poor up? The answer is every study done by HUD itself show the theory doesn't match reality. And I've given you one example after the other. I've shown you what happened in Dubuque. I've shown you what happened in Chicago. I can have calls all day long about what happened in cities around this country from Dallas and onwards. But now these psychotics want to roll it out nationwide, even though it's proven to be a failure, even though the kids don't do better in the better schools. Okay, the children don't do better in their new white schools. In fact, crime simply follows them to their safer neighborhoods, ruining the quality of life for the existing residents. These are hard words. I realize that they're painful words. I realize this agitates you. You're probably reaching for a Prozac. Well, you're reaching to put on some soothing music. You say, I don't know. I like this guy's voice, but I don't like what I'm hearing. Even if it's true, I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear that. I want to hear that when minorities are put in good white neighborhoods, the crime goes down and they all get along and they share food and ethnic foods are shared between tenants and the children do great in school. That's what I want to believe. It would be the same for Muslims. They don't want mosques and they want to get along with Christians, don't they? No, they don't. No, take a look at Europe. You'll get your answer there of what happens with the Muslim invasion. And take a look at what happened in Dubuque or anywhere else. You'll see what happens with the poverty invasion here in America. So Obama is using class warfare, taking the last drop of change that he can get. Remember what he said a few months ago? I want to squeeze the last drop of change out of my time in office. And guess who he's squeezing? By squeezing those in the safe white suburbs. Now, let's be clear. Why do people move to safe white suburbs? It's a trend in America that's been going on for a very long time. It didn't just start under Obama. It started a very long time ago. What happened was, is couples, when they're single, tend to like to live in cities. It's exciting. They can stay out late and go to bars and hang out and go to parties. They meet someone. They have sex. Then they think they're in love with each other because the sex is great. The next thing you know, it's the ring and the white gown, and then along comes the baby. And they said they would never, ever, ever leave the city. They love it. They were hipsters. Not us. We're not like our parents. No, no, not us. It's not going to happen to us. They don't move then because the child's nothing when it's an infant. They don't have to worry about it then. Then all of a sudden, they start to think about sending their little, poor little infant to a school. They look around their little hipster neighborhood, and they realize if they send their little lamb to a school, it'll be eaten by wolves. It'll come home naked and stripped and starving, if it comes home at all. So take a guess what they do next. They say, you know, honey, he's got to go to school. We better think about that. Well, can't we do what Obama does and send them to private school? Well, no, we're not president and first lady. We can't send them to Friends Academy. That's $50,000 a year. That's a nice inner-city school. We can't do it. So what happens is they realize they have to move to the suburbs, and they're very depressed. Then they go out there and they find a little house to rent or to buy, and they move in because the schools are safer for Johnny or Janie. And they kind of get used to it. They say, well, look at all the room we have. Amazing. We're not just all sleeping and working in one room. Look at this. There's even two bathrooms in here. Look at that. There's two bedrooms or two or three bedrooms. Look at that, honey. There's a little yard. Can we get a dog? And before long, they become suburbanites. They adjust to it. They do the bridge and they do the tunnel, just like Mom and Dad did. And before long, he wakes up and looks in the mirror and he sees his father staring at him. Before long, she looks in the mirror and sees her mother staring at her. And they say, well, you know what? I guess there was a reason for the fact that he took the subway out to Queens or the Long Island Railroad out to Nassau or to Suffolk. They did it for us. And by then it's too late. The parents are already pushing daisies. They can't go to Mom and Dad and say, sorry for the trouble we caused you. But the fact of the matter is that's the way of life. So the suburbs were created a long time ago because the costs of living in cities were too great. 70 years ago, 80 years ago, 100 years ago, that's what the suburbs were when they developed. What, you think you invented the world? So what I'm getting at is then they put Johnny in the better school where he can buy drugs without fear of getting beaten up. Or if they're really concerned, they send them to a religious school where the drugs are cleaner and much safer to buy. Because in the religious schools, there's absolutely no crime. And the drugs, I hear, much easier to get in the religious schools. It's a joke, but it's well known to be a fact. Oh, yeah, look into it here in Marin County. You ask any kids who went here about the access to drugs. It's easier in the private schools with less fear of being beaten up by the dealer because in many cases the dealer works for the school. But I didn't want you to just take that as the whole message because it isn't. It's a little aside to some of the realities of living in the suburbs. Suburban, suborbital. So we're going to go into orbit right now on this topic, and I'm going to change it a little bit by asking you what motivates Obama. He has no skin in the game. What's he gaining by this? There's no kickback to him. He's not making any money off it. So he's not doing it out of financial greed. Something else is motivating him to do this to the white people before he leaves office. What is he doing it for? Because if the kids move out to the suburbs and the poor neighborhoods and they still do poorly in school, who are you going to blame then? How many times have I told you the story that I studied this 20 years ago? I'm a former educator, so I was really interested in the fact. I keep hearing from minority communities that they have less money, less money, less money. If they only had the same money per student as white, blah, 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 better books, blah, blah, they would do better, blah, 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 blah. So I looked into that here in Marin County near San Francisco. There is a city called Marin City. It is largely an African-American community right outside of Sausalito, California. The Charming Ones Fishing Village, which is Disneyland by the sea now. But nevertheless, what's it called now? Marin City was built up with public housing following World War II because a lot of African-American folks came out here and built the Liberty ships that helped win World War II in the Kaiser shipyards right down there in Sausalito. So they built housing for the workers. These guys killed themselves in the shipyards. They built great Liberty ships, and it became sort of a community within a community. Well, I looked into the fact of why the kids were doing so poorly in that community. I said, is it true that they don't get as much money as the other public school students do in the surrounding white communities in Marin County, California? And the reverse was true. They actually got more money, this was 20 years ago, per student in the Marin City schools than they got in the so-called white community. So how do you deal with that? It's an uncomfortable, shall we say, very uncomfortable fact of reality that liberals don't want to look at, and that white people who are good in their heart don't want to accept, and they assume that anyone who's giving this message is A, distorting the facts, or is a racist. But the exact opposite is true. I'm giving you reality. Sometimes reality is very disturbing. Also, as the good doctor has told you many times when you were a child, sometimes good medicine tastes very bad. And I'll be back in a minute to take your calls right here on the Old Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
My Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com. It's the only company I trust to protect my wealth. Call 800-BUY-COIN. Trending on the Savage Nation right now is the article, Obama's Last Act is to Force Suburbs to Be Less White and Less Wealthy. And I didn't want to talk about the effects of this on the renter. I wanted to talk about Obama's motivation. What motivates him to be doing this to us in the last months of his regime? Why would he have to keep doing this? He's gotten virtually everything he wanted, and then some. But he's not happy. He keeps wanting to just spite a certain demographic, let's put it to you that way. Let's be very clear. He has a vendetta, an animus is the right word. Not a vendetta, he has an animus towards a certain demographic that is becoming so clear to anyone who has consciousness that it has to be discussed. Let's go to Mike on WABC. Mike, what's your opinion? Why does Obama do this? What motivates him? What drives this man?
I think it's self-hatred, Mike. I think deep down inside, he doesn't like the fact that he's of mixed race, and he'll do anything and everything to knock that away.
I wouldn't have taken the call if I hadn't have thought the same thing myself, to be honest with you, because there's no other explanation for why he has such a strong desire to constantly spite the demographic we are discussing by skirting around saying it. So, I mean, there's nothing more to say to it. That's your position.
Yeah. Yes, sir. I think he'll do anything and everything to desegregate these neighborhoods, to make it the way that he wants. It's like a boxing match. when the guy's so punch drunk, he's going for the knockout blow.
You're saying that the white middle class is so punch drunk from what he's done to the white class, middle class, that they're ready to be knocked out completely by him?
I believe so, because it seems like they don't do it. They don't want to do anything. It seems like they're just sitting here and taking it.
Yeah, I guess that's true. Okay, to lighten things up a bit, I'm sending you Teddy and Me, Confessions of a Service Human. I'm tempted to switch gears, but I'm not going to do it and read from the book, because some of the writing is, I think, excellent, or I wouldn't have written it and published it. But I don't think this is the right moment to talk about it. I've got such agita from the news that I can't stop talking about the news. The speech that he gave over the weekend was shocking. The shocking, and it's racism. And he gloats on it. He gloats on his racist statements. You can hear it. He literally gloats when he says these things. And I don't want to play it again just for emphasis. He changed accents a few times. How could these young people at Howard University not look through him? Did they all buy the act? They're still buying the racism act. Okay, then we got the Trump. Da-dum, 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 dum, 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 Trump, Trump, Trump. That's what you want to talk about, but not today. We haven't heard Donald on since he won last week. We don't know when we'll hear from his representatives again, but I'm not reaching out. I'll tell you right now. I got to talk about that for a minute, because I ran into a few people. You know, I bicycle around. People stop me and they say, boy, you should take great credit for what you've achieved with helping Donald Trump become the nominee. I said, okay, fine. No, I said, no, don't dismiss it. You were the primary reason he became the nominee. I said, all right, whatever. And he said, no, not whatever. You did it. And they said, well, he owes you. I said, he doesn't owe me anything. I said, moreover, I never asked for anything. And I said, you know, I haven't heard from them since he won, nor did I expect to hear from them. I'm not, like, working with them. And I have not reached out. I haven't said, oh, can we have Donald on or off? I think I had Donald on enough for a long time. But I suspect when the next need arises, I will be hearing from the Trump committee again. And when he's on the show, I'll ask him some pointed questions like, where do you stand on taxes? Because one day you said one thing and one day you said another. I mean, okay, you revised your policy positions. That's fair game. What is your actual policy position? Who pays more taxes? Is it the robber barons who are using triple Dutch swirl techniques to avoid paying their fair share? Or is it guys like me who work their whole life to achieve what I have? You want to tax me more? So how do you differ from Bernie Sanders? There, I asked it out loud. If that's where he's going to come out, like on Bernie Sanders, I'm sorry, there's going to be a problem from my point of view. I didn't work so hard to have Bernie Sanders win the presidency. I worked so hard that Bernie Sanders with a pretty wife become the president. Although that unto itself is a plus, to be honest with you. Thank God. All right, I'll be back in a minute. Be here or be nowhere.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE.
Savage. When I was graduating, the main black hair on TV was Mr. T. Rap and hip-hop were counterculture. Underground. Now Shonda Rhimes owns Thursday Night. And Beyonce runs the world. We're no longer entertainers, we're producers, studio executives. No longer small business owners, we're CEOs. We're mayors, representatives, presidents of the United States.
So what's he complaining about then? And why did he start by saying that racism still exists? What does he want? How does this end? So far as I know, Beyonce runs the world. What world does she run? I walked out of the Super Bowl in New Orleans when she sang. I had never heard of her. I couldn't stand her. I thought she was a disgusting, vulgar burlesque star, frankly. I couldn't stand it. It nauseated me. I ran out. I left at halftime. I couldn't watch it. It was like a bump and grind from the Phil Silvers era with a lot of glitter. That's all it looked like to me. I said, I don't know what world it is that she runs, but it's not my world. I saw her that one time for 3 minutes and almost puked. I never watched her again. But all right, so she runs the world. That's like La Raza. What world is it that she runs? What is the refer to? Anyway, just asking, that's all. So have we exhausted this project yet, this topic? Should I move on to something nicer? Something something different, something less political. Can I, for a few minutes? Can I get schmaltzy and a little sentimental for a moment or two? No, I should not. Robert, yes or no? It's a part of me. There's a part of me I suppress on the radio. Every once in a while it comes up. There's a sadness to me. There's a certain pathos underneath my strength. You know that, right? Raise your hand if you don't know it after 20 years of radio. You never heard The Hold Man if you haven't heard that. But I don't know a man alive who doesn't have pathos inside him somewhere. In my case, it's pretty on the surface much of the time because I never medicated it and I won't medicate it. I live with it. When I get depressed or sad, I just let it be. I just live with it. I just let the sadness or the depression be. And I engage in it. Like Churchill called it the black dog, right? When I get the black dog come around, I let the black dog come around. I just walk with him. I don't tell a black dog to go away. I don't take any medication. Never drink alcohol when you're depressed, by the way. It's a little hint. I don't know if you learned that yet, but if you are down, don't ever have a drink. It's going to make you worse. It's a central nervous system depressant. I'm just giving you a little hint that you may not know. You cannot drink your way out of depression. I write my way out. I paint my way out. Lately, I haven't painted in months, but I write, basically. And that's the best way out of it, in addition to exercise, vitamins, and whatnot. They all work amazingly. Well, hang out with the dog. I mean, truthfully, it's an easy fix. The pet, you look at him, and pets don't get really depressed. You say, let's go for a walk. Bingo, they're off the rug, and right away, they're running already. So they cheer you up. That's why I say, why are you harping on a dog? Yesterday was a bad day for me because it's my deceased brother's birthday on May 8th and Mother's Day, and frankly, I was alone. I've been invited to go to L.A., and I should have gone. I didn't go. I didn't want to fly, whatever. The whole family was down there. I was here. Alone? All right, I chose it. That's the life I choose. I'm an ornery guy, and I just sometimes don't want to move around. I've done too much traveling in my life. Even a one-hour flight on Southwest is sometimes something I don't want to engage in. Between the bags on the head and the fat people. And having the worst part of flying is listening to people on an airplane. I want to jump out of a window. Can't they shut up on an airplane? It's a closed space. They get hysterical. It's like the women who have a glass of wine in a restaurant. You give them three glasses of wine, you want to jump out of a window again. Gassed up, and they don't shut up. Same on an airplane. Old home week, you get on an airplane, where they meet each other. They don't even know each other. One second, they're ready. They're in love with each other in the seat and yelling. Oh, so you work for Ace Screw Company in Dallas. Oh, no kidding. I have an aunt from Dallas. And the next thing you know, it's an hour of about, oh, you want to shut up. But you can't say it. And I don't carry the noise cancellation headphones. I guess I should. The best noise cancellation headphones are called Don't Fly. They work better than any headphones ever invented. So I didn't fly. Stayed home, hung out with the dog. I don't even know what I did. Oh, it was a nice day. Thought about my brother. Looked at the picture of him in the wheelchair. I asked God, why did he not live? I just said it. I just like, what was that about? What'd you do that to him for? Of course, there was no answer. So then I talked to my dog. Yeah, I talked to my dog. You ever talk to your dog? People talk to their pets, you know. They're crazy. All of us who talk to our dogs are crazy. Sometimes I call on my brother's name. Is that insanity? Sometimes I have the weird thought that crippled little boy who never walked and never talked has been reincarnated as my poodle. I mean, it's an imaginary thing. I understand that. And I give him his name and I talk to him. Not a lot. I mean, then it's more like Daffyville already. But I'm saying like once in a while, I call him by his name. And, of course, he looks up like he understood that, as if to say, yep, that's who I am. But dogs will respond to you as I say. So his name is Teddy, but I say, Jerry. And he looks at me because Jerry and Teddy sound alike. So, I mean, he could make that mistake. So I say, Jerome. And he responds the same way. So I say, wait a minute. This is getting freaky now. It's like a freak out. Is he really reincarnated? Is it possible that he let him come back as a healthy dog? Because he punished him as a human being. He cursed him so badly. Well, these are the thoughts that drive men crazy. I understand that and get people depressed and sick and no one wants to hear it. But I had to live with it, that's all. And in the middle of it, you know, you do your stuff and you do your stories. You went for the next day and the next day was the show. And lately all I hear in my head, like in the silent moments, is how crazy I'm getting by the minute here, is I hear the breaker music to my show all the time now. Would you believe it? Robin, is it happening to you? If it is, you're in trouble because you're 29. But, I mean, like, I hear it. I hear, like, breaker music. I said, if this doesn't stop, this is serious business. I'm hearing, like, bumper music to my show during the days I'm off. So I said, wait a minute, let me back up from this and think about this. It's because I love the show so much, I can't wait till Monday, right? That's all that is. Yeah, well, I'm whistling in the dark. I hope that's all it is. Hope it's not the precursor to voices. Because the day I start hearing voices, whew, then I know it's over. Well, then my mother once said to me, she was very funny in her own way. She said, you know, sometimes people talk to themselves. She said, that's not so bad. And she said, when they start answering, she said, then they're really in trouble. That when you have a whole conversation with an imaginary voice, then you're really in trouble. Then you're fit for entertainment. That's about it. All you could do is go to work for Harvey Weinstein at that point and pray you have a good pair of legs to go with it. So that brings me to, you know, the book, Teddy and Me, honestly. It's not like a long build-up just to talk about the book. I'm telling you what motivates me. Why I even wrote the book. You get what I'm saying to you? Like, what do you think? I wrote the book because I wanted to show you pictures of me and the dog? I wrote the book not to get richer and pay the government more money. I wrote it because I wanted to bring joy to the world. I wanted to give people something beautiful to remember me by. And the ethereal nature of individuals and that we don't last forever. We have a shelf life and the dog is perfect and beautiful. And he's in there and he's not going to be around. But it's a legacy for all animals, so to speak. And it's also a legacy about the transient nature of life. And so that really is what I wrote it for. And I said Teddy is my best friend. But I wanted to go from that to the God thing for a minute. And in a way that I think would be acceptable to those of you who don't believe in all that. Here it is. Chapter 3, page 35. Which is, I believe in God, but when I'm driving, Teddy is my co-pilot. He reflects my attitudes and instincts and sometimes guides them. You see, most of the time we live outside the city, so he has a little grassy lawn to run on and a grassy hill to play on. When we're in the little cottage on the bay, he likes the gulls and cormorants, the seals and other sea creatures right off our back deck. On days he's not feeling well, as his service human, I hold him in my arms and point out the birdies, as we call them, diving for fish or the occasional moldy bagel I throw into the bay. He sits by my side watching each and every radio show. In fact, I'll bet he knows more about politics than any dog in the world, even the Obama's dog. After a while, he gets bored, so for fun he nips at the engineer's sneakers when he comes over to tweak my equipment. At least once a week, I drive him over the Golden Gate Bridge to San Francisco. We head to my high-rise apartment downtown. I refer to the building's elevator as the Tedevator because his eyes widen with anticipation at the thought of this marvelous gravity-defying machine that whisks us up to the top of the building where he can stare down at the bay, boats, and people. But I'm getting ahead of my story about being the most grateful service human in America. The minute we get over the bridge, Teddy stands up and starts gaping at all the people in the streets. He loves when I have to stop at a traffic light on Lombard Street so he can see the flow of humans, the stores, the restaurants, even the cars next to us. I know he's starved for stimulation. Those gulls and seals have their limits. Anyway, when we hit the garage in the building, he's first out to the Tedevator. Let's see where I go from there. I'm flipping the pages and looking. The pictures are nice. Well, let me read you one more piece. I have another minute. Do we have to go back to ugly stuff like politics? Let me read you one more piece. And that is this. Oh, I don't know. This is too sad. I don't think I can read it right now. I don't want to get into a maudlin mood. No, I can't do it. It's how I learned to talk to audiences and animals. I'll let you read it on page 49. I'll just start it and then stop it. Sometimes I got to watch where I go with my head. You know, your head can mislead you too. Do not let your heart and your mind deceive you, says the holy texts. And I ask myself, what does that mean? What do you mean, do not let your heart and your mind deceive you? What else do we have? What else are we getting motivated by? Like the religious people, don't let your heart and your mind deceive you. Okay, well, the pretty girl goes by, don't look at her. All right, don't look at her. Well, what are you supposed to look at? An ugly person? What do you mean, don't let your heart and your mind deceive you? Well, they're right in that sense. You could just stay home like a mutant in the house. So I was talking about God. I'm not a particularly religious man. I was raised in an atheistic household. My father was an atheist from Russia, and my mother was a kind of very faithful believer. Not religious, per se, but she really knew God existed. She did things that made me know that. The way she dealt with the tragedy of my silent brother taught me many things. The way my father dealt with it was another. The way I dealt with it is another. I learned to be an entertainer because of my mother's sadness and tragedy. You see, my mother was deeply saddened by what happened to my brother, and she couldn't fathom what happened. She didn't know why. She had a healthy daughter, then a healthy son, me. Then she had another boy who looked perfectly fine, blonde hair, blue eyes, perfectly fine. And then in a short period of time, they found out he was not normal. Couldn't see, couldn't hear, couldn't speak. He was basically a vegetable. So they thought, anyway. Well, it wrecked the whole family. My mother would cry endlessly in the apartment. No one knew this. Well, what does a little boy do when a mother is crying? He tries to make her happy. So I would entertain her. I would do stupid things. I became an entertainer for my mother. I would imitate people. I'd put on faces. I would make sounds and noises. And I'd wipe the tears away. She'd stop crying. She would smile. Even my closest family members don't know this story. I learned to talk to silent audiences and to entertain because of the tragedy with my brother. You say, what's the big deal? People die every day. Stop talking about it so much. All right, all right. Just telling you how one man's soul operates. So it affected me in that I learned to entertain my mother. As a result, I can go from the maudlin to the enraged man in 1 second. In 1 second, I can turn from a kind of maudlin sad guy into an enraged bull in 1 second. You see, it all rages inside my soul, and in that sense, I'm very much alive top to bottom. But I also learned how to talk to audiences and animals because of my silent brother. See, they said to me, don't talk to him. He was sitting in a high chair strapped in there. He was blind. He was deaf, and he couldn't speak. And when no one was looking, I would sneak into the kitchen to talk to him. I want you to see how primitive the world was in the 1940s in a doctor's profession. So they told me, the healthy brother, don't go in there. Don't talk to your brother. You'll bother him. I said, what do you mean? How can I bother him if he can't hear me? So when they weren't looking, when no one was around, I would talk to him anyway because I loved him. I just loved him so much.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com. All right, welcome back to the Savage Nation. Let's go to WFTL in Fort Lauderdale. Ray, thanks for calling. What's on your mind, Ray?
Dr. Savage, I just want to say I really appreciate all the information. It's language, borders, and culture. Makes a lot of sense to me. But if I had a choice between the books, I'd take Teddy and Me because that's really what's important in the end. I just lost a dog after 15 years. And there's more to it than just stuff we can't control.
Look, I'm not a combat veteran, but ask combat veterans whose dogs have been with them for years out in the field what it means when they can't take them back home with them. Or take a look at the pictures of the burials where the dog sits on the coffin and won't leave the graveyard. I mean, there's something more here than meets the eye. Believe me, Ray, it's not just woof woof and giving him a treat. You know what I'm saying? There's a bond between man and dog that is ancestral and deep. And it goes back to the beginning of civilization, if not before that. And even though we in the modern world live with a little, you know, fluffy little pet, if you look at the history of man and dog, you'll see it's much deeper than just pampering a little animal, Ray. I think that's what you're saying.
Absolutely. Absolutely. My wife
All right, Ray, stay on the line. I'm sending you Teddy and Me. Listen, I don't want to get stuck on this, but I want to read you something from Teddy and Me since this is going to be it for today on that. Since so much of talk radio is based upon anger and rage and even hatred and indignation, I often turn to my best friend Teddy to feel kindness, warmth, and love. That's right at the top of 81. He inspires me to feel these things. And that's why it's important to have my dog at my side during almost every show. My voice and my ability to move crowds are my gift, but also my burden. This power of the magical voice, which I first discovered in the first grade in a slum school in the Bronx, can change people's fates. How would you use this power as a broadcaster and best-selling author if you were me? I intend to make this day the first day of the rest of my life, as people used to say in the hippie 60s and 70s. We can change our lives. You say, well, what's wrong with your life, Michael? Well, it's not that there's anything wrong with my life, but it's not what I want it to be. I don't feel that I'm inspiring people in the way I want to inspire them. You see, you can inspire through hate, as ISIS does, as the ACLU does, even as Hillary and Obama do in their own quasi-moderate ways. They inspire through hate. But you can also inspire through anger. You can inspire through rage. You can inspire through false righteous indignation. We know that's all out there. We get it every day of the week, mainly on talk radio. In varieties, that's what you get. Anger, rage, false righteous indignation, and it riles you up and you listen. That's an inspiration. But then there are the bigger inspirations. And I'm reading from Teddy and Me. Now you know why I wrote it. Now you know what it's all about. It's about inspiration. It's about kindness. It's about sparking the human souls out there. Thank you for listening. I'll be back. Be here.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage. Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Talk radio for the thinking person, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
It is Fats Domino on Blue Monday on The Savage Nation. Hour one was about Obama's forcing suburbs to be less white and less wealthy. And what motivates him? Is it racism or Marxism or a combo? And I think we've exhausted that topic. And then the army being shrunken to its smallest level since World War II. It's down to a level that makes us almost indefensible. The country can almost not defend itself by what he's done to this military. In addition to demoralizing it, he shrunk the numbers. So if you think that there are no long-lasting effects to this wonderful man in the White House, the thin man from Honolulu, the smoker, you are mistaken. And then, of course, I moved into another area of my soul or my mind, and that was the Teddy book, Teddy and Me. It's coming out tomorrow. I'd like you to check it out, of course. But the thing is, I actually got a little too personal in reading from it. I had to cut a segment off. If you'll notice, there was a segment that was abruptly stopped with a long pause. Well, there was a reason for it, because that's what was required. Let's take a couple of calls now in hour three. Bill on KLIF in Dallas. Go ahead, please. Bill, what's on your mind?
Well, Mike, I just wanted to thank you for your eloquent, wonderful telling of the story with regard to your brother. He was so impaired, and yet you, with your wonderful empathy and your care for him, reminded me so much of what the gospel says, you know, greater love than this nobody has, to put aside your life, and you did for your brother. You loved him. The way you said you loved him so much, and you would sneak around the doctors and the other people who told you don't bother him, and you just loved him so much, and he knew it intuitively. You are an inspiration. You, to me, are one of the finest people I've ever heard on the radio, and I thank you, and God bless you.
Well, let's just say this show is dedicated to all the children who suffer out there. Let's put it to you that way. All of the impaired children, this entire show is dedicated to them. Just let's pray that we are strong enough to resist the Soviet agents in our government who want to put in death panels. And if you think this is a laughing matter, you have no idea how bad a government can get, unless you've studied how bad governments have gotten. And as I did a show last week on death panels. Remember, I did a show on should you live past the age, I think it was 75, or be terminated. Remember that one? These same monsters who are pushing forward such notions would also exterminate the so-called handicapped. And they would do it, by the way, in the name of kindness. That's how Hitler did it in the beginning. You don't know that. I'm a student of all of these things. When Hitler first exterminated the so-called handicapped and the mentally deformed, let's say, he didn't say we're killing them because they're deformed. He said he was putting them to sleep because they would suffer less. That's how they did it. But there was such an outrage in German society that they discontinued the program. The same mentality exists in the Obama administration right now with regard to Obamacare and death panels. But I don't want to see, you didn't want to get sidetracked. I'm going to talk about something else, that's all. So I think I'll talk about something I cooked over the weekend. I'll tell you why, because talk radio is very much like cooking a meat sauce. I thought about it. I was alone. I didn't want to eat in the restaurant on Saturday night. I just didn't want to go near it. I just couldn't take another minute of, yes, and how are you, and thank you, and a piece of bread. Oh, thank you. Si, senor, every minute. Oh, water, too. Oh, senor, thank you, senor. Every minute, you have to thank them. Oh, look at that, a napkin. Oh, senor. Oh, do you have another fork? Oh, senor. Can I get some olive oil? Oh, yes, senor. Gracias. I mean, a whole day, like a speech. So I had bought some ranch-fed, whatever, grass-fed beef the day before, figuring I'd want to cook over the weekend. I'm going to give you a story that leads to Talk Radio. Don't worry about it. It's not a cooking show. Now, here's how you make a great meat sauce. First of all, you chop up, you get the oil, and the oil's critical, as you know, base is oil. Don't burn it, heat it, but make it hot, not warm. You don't want limp oil, you want warm oil near hot, but not burnt. And turn the heat down the minute it gets to a certain level, because you don't want it burning. Put in very minced, like a half a minced onion in a big frying pan. You got to move the onions around a lot until they become translucent and soft. Now, again, don't burn the onions, okay? Now take, like, let's say half a pound of meat, or let's say half a pound of meat, whatever you want to make, and put it in there, just in little pieces with your fingers. Use your fingers. Don't be afraid. Use your fingers. Get tactile in your cooking. Put the pieces of meat into the cooking onions and the oil, and then get at the wooden spatulas, because it's a nonstick pan. You don't want to ruin the pan. See, everything is important, right? And then start mincing the meat up that way with the two spatulas, moving it around in the oil and the onions. I'm giving you an inside tip here. So get the meat in there, move it around, get it small, smaller, smaller, smaller with the spatulas. Keep breaking it up, breaking it up, breaking it up, breaking it up. You got the meat cooking in the oil, right? Till the meat turns, all the red is gone. No more than that. Once the red is gone, now you really start to have fun. Now you got to put in some of the spices. I happen to love tarragon. But it has to be a pinch of tarragon. Tarragon is great for taking away the stink of... I don't like the smell of poultry. It's used primarily in Spanish cooking, but it's a great spice to, let us say, mute the smell of fowl. It's called fowl for a reason. F-O-W-L, but it could be F-O-U-L. Tarragon takes away that smell in chicken, but I found an interesting trick. It's wonderful if you use a little bit of it in meat. Use a lot of it with chicken. So you put a little bit of tarragon. I happen to like oregano in almost everything, a pinch of oregano. I have fresh parsley, Italian parsley growing in my garden. I put that in there. Stir it around, and then basically you're done. Just take whatever bottled sauce you use. I'm not going to give you the brand. I only use one brand. Put it in there, low heat, cover on it, boom, you're done. Now, what am I telling you? Talk Radio is very similar. In hour one and two, I gave you the meat. I did. I gave you the meat. I gave you the political meat. Now I want to give you the tarragon and the oregano of Talk Radio. And I just did. I gave you a recipe. I gave you the spice of the show just now. You see what I'm saying? I want to move along here. I want to move along. I don't want to get stuck now on Obama's monstrosities. I could go back to it. I could get deeply into it. And I know we can get you agitated, you know, on what motivates Obama to do these things to us in the last months of his horrendous, oppressive regime. He's gloating on it. Or Kerry, the monster, getting up there and slamming the wall and telling the graduates to prepare for a borderless world. Why would they do a thing like this? Why would this Connie Barker, John Kerry, telling graduates to prepare at Northwestern University for a borderless world when we see the devastation of the lack of borders on Europe? When we see the invasion, the plundering of the nations, the crimes that are being committed by the invaders from Africa and the Middle East. I read today, for example, that Merkel is considered the worst leader in modern Germany since Hitler. I've said the same thing myself, but it was written in a more eloquent way than that. Merkel has done more damage to Germany than you could ever imagine. Why is she working day and night against the whole concept of Germany? Why? Why does she bring people in who hate their country, who hate their religion, who hate their race? Why does she bring in people who practice a sort of religious genocide into their nation, I ask myself? And what does it have to do with America? It has an awful lot to do with America when you consider that Trump, in many ways, represents to most Americans the champion, a rescuer, a knight in shining armor, who may stop this tide from engulfing us. There is a great article by David Kupelian in worldnetdaily.com, Is Trump America's Knight in Shining Armor, that I would recommend that you read. It's a very interesting article. and I can emphasize a few of the sentences. And he writes that right now in 2016, the tens of millions of Americans feel exactly like the citizens of those mythical terrorized ancient kingdoms in the classic stories. They see their once great nation ravaged by terrible forces. Their leaders seem to have gone mad, intentionally leaving the nation's borders unguarded, allowing hordes of invaders to swarm into their country, plunder their wealth, and commit heinous crimes. Their supreme leader is widely seen as hating his own country, continually betraying longtime allies while aiding her mortal enemies. The nation's youth are corralled into ivy-covered brainwashing centers and indoctrinated into bizarre beliefs and destructive behaviors. The land's once robust economy has been decimated, with onerous taxes and regulations strangling businesses and the nation's major industries, along with the millions of jobs they provide, leaving their homeland for foreign shores. On top of all this, a genocidal, worldwide mind-control cult has declared war on their troubled nation, murdering and maiming people at will, yet their leader won't even utter the enemy's name, let alone fight it. Millions suspect he sides with the enemies. And then he says Americans, beholding their nation's increasing woes, wistfully recall the happier land of their youth, once blessed above all other nations, where despite its flaws, unparalleled liberty, prosperity, and opportunity were in abundance. But right now they watch in dismay as their beloved society disintegrates. Each day they numbly tune in the news to hear of the latest outrages, Muslim immigrants and refugees streaming into this once Christian country at breakneck speed, undercover videos depicting so-called doctors bragging about killing beautiful little preborn children and then selling their body parts for maximum profit. Our armed forces are being degraded and demoralized in myriad ways by a commander-in-chief who secretly loathes the military, and the government requiring teenage American schoolgirls to shower with boys who claim they identify as girls. And yet, if you complain, if you dare raise a plaintive cry for decency and reason to revail, once again, before it's too late, you are viciously attacked and branded as hateful, ignorant, racist, bigoted, homophobic, anti-woman, or anti-immigrant. Thus it is that massive numbers of good Americans are desperately looking for a champion, a rescuer, a bold knight in shining armor who will fight and destroy the monster that has for too long been devouring the nation and its inhabitants. To many, that man is Donald Trump. However, real life is not a bedtime story, and presidents and candidates are full of flaws. Even great flaws. Worse, sometimes our would-be heroic figures are not at all what they appear to be. And he talks about the Trump phenomenon. It's David Kupelian on WND.com. Is Trump America's knight in shining armor?
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I trust to protect my wealth and financial future. Call 1-800-289-2646. Listen, I got to get to this story after I take a call, but listen to the headline. The hotel and motorcade costs for Obama's two-day trip to Saudi Arabia cost $3.1 million. The Ritz-Carlton Hotel alone cost $2 million. And you say, what? What do you mean a hotel for $2 million? Did you know that he brought an entourage with him? Hanger-ons, guests. And he spent $2 million in the Ritz-Carlton Hotel for his friends. They were called VIPs. Who was in there? The VIP delegation of Obama included who? Al Sharpton? Beyonce? Who was with him? Rooms for security and the VIP delegation were also booked at the Four Seasons Hotel Riyadh at Kingdom Tower totaling $200,000 and the Courtyard Marriott totaling $240,000. Three limousine companies were also booked for the king, including contracts worth $240,000 to Al Salim Transportation and Tourism Company, $240,000 to SMSA Express Transportation Company. I can read on and on. The king, not the president. So let me go to some callers now on the show. Tim on KSFO, thanks for listening. Tim, what's on your mind from San Francisco?
Dr. Savage, I use the argument, not the argument, but the discussion about the difference between the souls and the spirit when it is relating to dogs. Someone asked me about my friend, and do you believe your friend has a soul? And I explained that I believe that my dog has a spirit that I am able to connect with. But I understand that my dog has a more finite existence than I do. So my dog is here for a period of time, but I can't expect, even the 16 years that we were together, I can't expect that to be, you know, as long as my life. And was able to...
Yeah, well, it's an old question that we had last week, which is, people got mad at me and they said, my dog has a soul. I said, how do you define the difference between a soul and a spirit, they said to me. Well, it's a matter of semantics in a certain way. I mean, is there a difference? In the human being, we believe we have a soul that's eternal. Isn't that true? That lives on in the kingdom after life. Isn't that the fundamental belief of all religions?
That's the argument that I used when they were explaining.
All right, but we don't believe that dogs and cats and newts and worms have souls that live on, do we?
You're correct. No, we do not.
All right, so they have animation, meaning they have a spirit while they're here on this earth. But they don't have eternal spirits, the eternal souls. It's a tricky question. There's no definitive answer. Many people would disagree, you know. And I wouldn't disagree. Man is different than animals. Look at what we've created on this planet. The good, the bad, and the ugly. Look at our greatness. Look at the buildings, the bridges, the airplanes, the spaceships. Look at the discoveries in medicine. That makes man a unique animal, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely agree with you.
Of course you would. Of course you would. So, we are different than the mere lower animal. But, you know, the problem is we're rooted in an animal body. And in that sense, we're not much different than the lower animal, so to speak. See, man has transcended the animal kingdom per se. I remember reading that when I was 18. And literally, one of those things that made my life change. It was by, I can remember to this day, the day I read it, by William Bartlett. And he wrote, man has transcended the animal kingdom, but it's created such a conflict within us because we're still heir to all the ills that flesh is. We're all subject to all the ills that flesh is heir to, right? In other words, we may think we think like gods, act like gods, fly like gods, think like gods, laugh like gods, etc. But at the end of the day, if we break a toe, we know we're just an animal. We broke a bone, just like an amphibian can break a bone in their toe. And so, you know, who are we? We're trapped between two existences. The animal world is our body. The spiritual world is our soul. And here we are, between two worlds. And that brings us to the world of politics. How does that relate to a monster in the White House who abuses us on a daily basis and gets away with it because of Jake Tapper, Wolf Blitzer, and the entire establishment of sycophants who have a job that they're not doing? How do we survive this man is the question. How do we survive him?
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
It is a beautiful Monday. It's great to be alive. It's a great country to live in. It just shows you how hard it is to destroy a great nation. I mean, here you have a band of rascals who have waited their whole life to grab the wheel and the engine room and the compass of this great nation and destroy it as quickly as they can. Not so much to steer it on the rocks and see it break up, but to convert it into something it was never intended to be. And they have not yet been able to do it. And they're racing against the clock with the months that remain to destroy everything that's decent about the nation before they are thrown out of office. Now, honestly, if Hillary wins, there's going to be changes for the worse. And I believe that only Trump, and I said believe. Notice when I said believe. I wasn't born yesterday. I didn't put him on a pedestal yet. I believe he can change things. A, I have to find out if he really cares to do so. And B, I want to see if we can get it done. So don't think I'm sitting here waiting for January for the world to suddenly open up and become the great world again. So we'll have to wait and see if he wins, and I think he will win if he runs against her. I think it'll be a landslide against her because she's got a lot of baggage. She's not as powerful as she appears to be. And other than owning the Stooges and the media, I don't think the people like her very much, okay? So I think he's going to become the next president. The question is, what will his motivations actually be? Meaning, what are his real policies going to be like once he gets there? You know already he's being circled by the Bob Dole, Mitt Romney people. You know that already. I mean, you see by the policy changes. And then will he actually be able to move Congress? I'll have to wait and see. And I hope that I'm still around to be talking about it on the radio. If not, well, you'll catch up with me somewhere else. Because the future is, I don't know what it's going to be. I'm not sure. I'm thinking about, you know, the salmon theory. I may have finished my destiny in media by the end of December. I'm not sure about it. I'm just not sure about it. I have to think. I've been thinking about it with a few people I know. Well, I think I'm getting too personal here. I don't want to get into that. Let's go to KLIF. Thad, welcome to the Savage Nation from KLIF in Dallas. What's on your mind?
Years ago, Michael, you gave I heard you give an explanation why God allows has dogs or cats live less years than humans. And I was moved by it then, but I can't remember it. Can you repeat that?
Mrs. Savage created that because she tells me fairy tales every once in a while. And she said, this is how you explain to children why dogs die before we do. And the answer is that if we died before them, they would be left alone and there'd be no one to care for them. So God created it so that they have shorter lives than we do, so they're not left alone and abandoned.
That's very simple and it's very beautiful.
Well, that's right. The simplest truths are often the best. So that was a great explanation. I think it's a good one. Because kids don't understand these things. They go to pieces, you know.
Oh, yeah, probably we're going to go to pieces when my dog dies. It's turned to...
Yeah, don't, let's not worry about it. Let me send you a copy of Teddy and Me. You know, just enjoy them all you can. That's all. WJCW in Tennessee. Erica, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you. Dr. Savage, you have saved my life from 20 years ago. You transcend to from the mystical world everything that I think. And I hope you don't go off the air, and I hope you don't stop, because we need you desperately. You have made it possible for me to live and understand things that nobody would talk about and nobody would state. And I think you're absolutely right about Mr. Barak, in that he wants to destroy Western civilization. And that was his intent from 07. I could see it in his eyes. And he hates us. He hates the white culture. And then I think one of the reasons is he could never be it. He isn't it. So he wants to destroy it.
You know, if you let's deal with this rationally, because this what you're saying can be misconstrued by people. If you read Obama's autobiography, he himself says he identified as a middle-class white kid up until he went to Columbia University. He was just like the average kid in Honolulu, who was basically from the middle class. He didn't see himself as a black revolutionary. He said he did just what they did. And then when he went to Columbia University, something happened. He grew his hair out, he said, and he started to come on like a Black Panther. And he said he started to do the, you know, all of the stuff they were doing. And he said the minute he did that, he got more attention than he did before. And so he did more of it. And then he did more of it because he got more attention acting like a radical. So he found out what worked. And what worked was hatred. And so why should he stop now when he could travel to Saudi Arabia with an entourage and spend, did you see, hear the number, $2 million for hotels for VIPs? Who was in that trip with him to Saudi Arabia? How does he get away with it? How does the First Lady get to fly to South America with a separate Air Force One and abuse the office of the First Lady like that without a question mark? How does she have 72 personal assistants and people who fawn over her at public expense and get away with it? How does she do that? The answer is there's no media anymore. Erica, thank you for the call. But again, I don't want to just go into the Obama thing. So without giving the details, because I'm not allowed to do it, I just got the ratings for last month. I guess I got to talk about them for a minute for the first few markets. And in New York, I'm proud to tell you that I did so great. All over again, I beat my number one competitor on WABC. I'm on WABC. And I beat my number one competitor, who has all the advantages I don't have. Tremendous promotion, etc. And I beat him in my enormously. One of great, great numbers. Great numbers. San Francisco still doing fantastic. Dallas, my new station of KLIF. Fantastic people came over with me from the other station. And so in the first few markets, I want to thank you for spreading the word and listening to the Savage Nation. GAW, Massachusetts. Ray, you're up on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind, Ray?
Hello, Dr. Savage. I bought your book, by the way, the first week it came out, and it's absolutely wonderful and copiously referenced.
Wait a minute. Wait. You mean Government Zero?
Government Zero, yes. Yes.
Yeah, okay. The political masterpiece, the book that launched Donald Trump. What's on your mind today?
Well, Donald Trump, I think, is the king of reality. He makes his perceptions conform to what really is. Bernie Sanders and the Democrats, they make a future you can make believe in where perception counts more than reality. So the good.
Yeah, well, liberals live in the world of unreality. That's why they're so good in the arts and entertainment. They live in fiction. And so so I open up with the number one story. Obama's latest act is to destroy safe white suburbs and bring crime to every home. New York Post article where his housing secretary, Julian Castro, and Hillary's rumored running mate is this Julian Castro. They are cooking up a scheme to reallocate funding for Section 8 housing to punish suburbs for being too white and too safe. That story caught great traction today on the show because people cannot believe he's still up to his old tricks and his old animosity. That's the whole point here. In other words, the reality is that wherever this has been tried, the kids who were moved into the white suburbs still didn't do well and the crime went up. But they don't want to know about that.
That's right. Well, the other thing is, think about the Republicans, people, the guy who fixes your muffler, the guy who fixes your car, the guy that builds, all of these people have to deal with the real world. An awful lot of Democrats, they live in college campuses, they live in cities where the owners take care of the property. They're increasingly divorced from the real world. And
yes, it's a clear way of looking at it. So what you're saying, in essence, is that the working person is resonating with Trump's message because he's speaking to them. And they detest the disconnected liberal who speaks about things such as prepare for a borderless world, Kerry says, the elitist. Stands on his pedestal and says prepare for a borderless world as though he doesn't know what's going on with the erasure of borders in Europe, right?
Yes, yes.
All right. Thank you, my friend, from calling up there in Massachusetts. KSFO, San Francisco. And by the way, that opens up a line to the Savage Nation at 855-400-7282. 855-400-SAVAGE. We have one open line. Grab it while you can so that you can be heard by more people than you have met and will meet for the rest of your life. It's pretty true, by the way. Pretty amazing. We've talked about a lot of things so far on the show. Kerry slamming Trump, telling students to prepare for a borderless world. Poland abolishes the hate crime unit because they know that hate crimes are a legal scam to disarm people from common sense and survival. I asked if leftists celebrated Poland standing up to Soviets, why are they not celebrating now that they're standing up to the new Soviet Union called the EU? We talked about Zuckerberg pushing his liberal agenda to make money. We had the common carrier argument versus the First Amendment. I said that one of the top five things that Donald Trump should do would be shut down NPR. NPR is using our tax money to terrorize us with lies. I talked about the New York Post story on Section 8 housing and the plan to move Section 8 into wealthy neighborhoods by raising the amount of money they're going to give these people to move into your neighborhood. And I showed how the same theories failed under Bill Clinton. Crime followed them into the new neighborhoods. Those are some of the topics that we have touched on to this point. Bob on KSFO, line 5, you're up on the Savage Nation.
Hello, doctor. Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to make a comment. When my dog sleeps, she barks like she's chasing an imaginary snake in her mind. But I'm just wondering, what realm was that encompassed?
Yeah, I know what you're saying. Like when I hear my dog crying at night and whimpering, like what is he worrying about? Like I'm leaving him alone? I've left the house. One of his worst fears is being abandoned, right? What is a dog, which is a pack animal, what is a dog who is a pack animal fear the most? It's being left alone, isn't it true?
Yes.
So what can he be worrying about? What's he worrying about? Is he worrying about being left alone? He doesn't worry about starving. I don't think he's missed a meal in his life. So he's not worrying about being attacked by another dog. I never let that happen. He's so small, I made up my mind that after my first little dog was killed 20 years ago in front of my eyes by a Dalmatian who leapt on him and bit him and killed him right in front of my eyes. You ever have that happen to you? What a story that is. right in front of my eyes, I had a little Yorkshire Terrier in Queens, New York. I was walking him, and a Dalmatian was off-leash, ran across the street, jumped on him, bit him, his mouth fit right over his whole little body, and punctured his lungs. I couldn't do a thing. The dog was dead before I even reached down there. I rushed him to the pet hospital, and he was dead, that's all. So, you know, I have made up my mind, if I'm walking this dog, he's 10 pounds, but he's little. Especially these monsters that walk around with these ugly killer dogs off leash. They get me so angry in Marin County. You have no idea what I feel about those people. They do it to threaten everybody. Oh, don't worry, he's friendly. Oh, don't worry, he's friendly. Why do they walk their dogs off leash? It's to terrorize you. Spoiled rotten. Spoiled rotten progressives with their pit bulls and their monster dogs. Every time I see one, I don't get mad. I pick my dog up and hold him in my arms. Now, is that enough to stop a pit bull from running it? No, that pit bull will rip me to pieces and the dog. And that's why I always carry my good friend Smith with me. But the fact of the matter is, I don't want Smith to have to intervene between me and a pit bull. I want that stupid owner to be arrested by the police for threatening everybody with his killer dog. But the police can't be everywhere at all times, and that's why Smith needs to be around. And if he's not there, there's always his friend, Dr. Wesson. I'll be back in a minute on the Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Hey, our Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I trust for wealth insurance, gold and silver. Call 800-BUY-COIN. It is the truth that 3 hours flew by. Hard to believe. Amazing. Amazing what the human mind is and can do. And I want to thank you for being with me for these 3 hours, if you've stayed from the beginning, or if even 5 minutes, you know what I'm saying? Let's go to Diane on line 8 from KSFO, where the Savage Nation rules. What's on your mind, Diane?
Yeah, I was just going to say that I think that President Obama, with the policies he's doing, is just kind of exemplifying maybe some pathology or narcissism, and you know, it's not well recognized, but that's why it's so destructive. And you know, he's ramping it up because he sees the, you know, the viability of Trump and the need that America's in a, you know, in a sad state. But I think he's pathological, and I think you might have mentioned that years ago when he first came into office about how he was raised.
Well, yes, I did talk about what the effects of an abandonment by a father had upon him. The father abandoned him and his mother. Then she married an Indonesian Muslim. He was raised in Indonesia. He spoke Arabic and went to a mosque, a little day school for Muslim children. It's a well-known fact. It's in his own autobiography. Should this not be a factor in a presidency? Should it not have been part of the vetting process by Wolf Blitzer and the other useless idiots in the fifth column? Don't you think that was an important story? But the Republicans hid it as well, and we're paying the price for it now. The global march of jihad has greatly expanded under Obama. The terrorist events, if you add them up after 9/11, have been manifold and increasing under Obama. He won't even mention the word Islam and terrorism in the same breath. So, yeah, it had an awful lot to do with it. Why is he so anxious to bring in so many Syrian Muslims to America? What does he want to do, transform this into a mini-what? What does he want us to look like? Lebanon, where there's been a civil war, where the nation has been destroyed since the Palestinians were brought in there as a peaceful gesture to the Palestinians? They destroyed the once dominant Maronite Christian nation. Do you know that, Diane?
No, I wasn't aware of that. But
well, no one knows anything, okay? But you know a little bit about the motivation of Obama and his animus against the America that we all love so much. The only question is it too late? And even if Trump wins, is it too late? I don't know. But, you know, if we listen to him, the fact of the matter is he says two different things in his speeches, one after the other. He starts by saying that race relations are no good, and there's racism, but it's better to have been born now than when he was born. Nevertheless, it's over. His speeches are over. I can't wait to hear the next batch of speeches. Tomorrow is another day. Teddy and me is in the bookstores tonight. The cases are being opened up. There's a picture of me and him. And if it was just a picture book, okay, fine, but it isn't. It's a book of stories in there that I will read with you over the coming week. I hope you have a chance to check the book out tomorrow. Until that time, until we meet again, happy trails, my friends.